The Why Me Project, an exclusive presentation of Faith Strong Today.
Episode number
159.
So close.
I'm living in the past.
With everything that has been going on as of late, though,
yeah.
I think it's somewhat understandable. We don't know what day is what.
It's true.
And then with everything that you're watching in the news, and it's just, it's become quite a bit.
It really has been.
So it's kind of nice that we have something like this podcast where we're able to just dive into people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
And you also, if you're going through something, we'd love for you to share with us.
Yeah, absolutely. There's lots of ways for you to reach out to us, including subscribing, and you can connect with us that way.
Oh, love that idea. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, whymeproject@outlook.com. But very excited to have our guest for this week. And Lauren Coral, how are you?
I'm really blessed. I'm doing really well.
Well, we like to ask the skill testing question because we never know where it's going to go. Who are you and where did you come from?
I'm born and raised in Winnipeg, Manitoba. You know, I've had an opportunity to grow up. Kind of growing up, it was interesting. I grew up in a Catholic home, and so I really wasn't following my faith very, very strong. In fact, it was as I got old enough not to go to church, I didn't. And I kind of consider myself as a CEO Catholic, Christmas and Easter only.
I've never heard that before.
Neither have I.
I like it.
So, you know, being involved in high-level sports as, you know, young athlete, football, hockey, and baseball, as you get involved, you kind of play with older athletes. As you're younger, you end up getting age advanced, that kind of thing. But not only did I get to play with them, but I also ended up hanging around with them probably a little too much. That off-field behavior kind of was what initially was my downfall with my early sports career. Kind of thought that would go away as I later on I worked in sport management. That was my degree, and I later on worked for Baseball Canada as their technical director. And in that role, I kind of thought, okay, this is good. This is I'm getting married. Maybe all this stuff will go away. Well, what I found was the boys' club only got smaller. And so the off-field stuff would end up with the Blue Jays, Expos, staff, whatnot, players. Sadly, I lost my marriage. I have a wonderful daughter that I still have an amazing relationship with, and I'm blessed for that. But that was around the time when it was a turning point in my life when I really needed to make a decision. I was in Ottawa. I'd moved away to work at this really high-level job. But it kind of reminded me of a time when I was working in baseball for Manitoba Baseball. I was working actually as a summer student, and the Blue Jays were coming to town to Winnipeg for what they call the Baseball Festival. So they were going to play an exhibition game against Team Canada. And at that time, you know, I was wide-eyed and just looking to meet a Blue Jay. But you know what? They were just so uninterested in being in Winnipeg for an exhibition game because they only get 1.5 days off a month as major league players, that their off day they didn't want to be spending here. And so basically most guys big-leagued me. They kind of just walked right by me. But this one guy, he stopped and said, oh, hey, what do you do? Where do you work? What is Manitoba Baseball Association? What do you guys do? Where did you play baseball? All these wondering questions he kept asking me. And at the end, he said, Lauren, would you like an autograph? I go, I would love an autograph. And then this guy's name was Kelly Gruber. And then Kelly says, what about if I get an autograph for the whole team? I said, well, that would be over the moon. So he comes back, brings his baseball back. I look at the ball, and away he goes, and the game starts. And I look after him, looking for Kelly Gruber's autograph. And by his autograph, it says, Kelly Gruber, room 109. And I'm wondering, what the heck is this? Room 109. So I go home, and I tell my mom, Mom, look, this baseball player, like, I'm not sure why he's inviting me back to this room 109. She goes, you dummy. That's Romans 10-9. That's Romans 10-9. So the verse of salvation. And so I was like, oh, okay. And my mom, like, okay, the black sheep's going to come home. I'm going to turn my life around. This was 1997. God didn't have it in the plans yet. The seed was planted, but it took 12 years for that seed to germinate. 12 years later, I gave my life to the Lord. Got involved with Athletes in Action quite quickly after that. And they did a one-on-one discipleship with me. And because of that was my strong suit was baseball. Because of my experience in baseball, they wanted me to be the chaplain for the Winnipeg Goldeyes professional baseball team here in Winnipeg. And I just kind of said to them, hey, hold the phone here. I just became a believer. And I said, hold it. And they said, no, we'll mentor you. And so they did. And And that's kind of how I got started. So I spent 12 years as the Gold Eyes chaplain doing baseball chapel, and I loved it. And then later on, I got the opportunity when my mentor, Dave Johns, who actually was the Winnipeg Blue Bombers chaplain and even the Jets for many years, when he was going to go off to do other ministry stuff, they mentored me, and I got this job, and I started off with the Gold Eyes and the Bombers, and then I was approached by the Jets to do them as well. So, and now I have the Jets and their minor league team, Manitoba Moose. So that's sort of a long way of answering your first question, is where I'm from and where I'm to now. I'm remarried to my wonderful godly bride Heather, and she's been a great stepmom to my daughter. And we're just really blessed to do ministry together. My wife has got an amazing wives ministry with the Bombers and whatnot. So so we're really blessed.
So what is the role then of a chaplain?
Okay, well, as a chaplain, I do chapels, Bible studies, game day prayers. Depending on the sport, like hockey, I don't do anything on game day. That's just kind of their culture. But for football, for example, I'll do a typical week in a football season would be I'd have on day two of their work. 5-day work week, I would do a player's Bible study. Day three, I would do a coach's Bible study. Now, remember, these are all optional. Only those that want to come. Day five, game day, I will do a chapel, actually for the visiting team. People don't know this, but the visiting team, we do chapels for them. And people say, how can you do chapels for the visiting team? I said, well, I don't do a very good one for them. I basically do the Lord's Prayer and walk out. So.
But, somehow I doubt that.
No, I know. You know, the sad part is, you know, it's like anything, right? You give them a grade and you go, oh, man. And then you go to yours and your team and you kind of go, oh, man, I think the one for Edmonton was better, you know? Like, so. But, you know, just depending on the sport, right? But for hockey, we don't serve the visiting team. Baseball, we do both teams as well. Maybe 50 minutes tops, like all in. Guys come in the room, opening prayer. You do your teach and then closing prayer, because the coaches, they're on a tight schedule. They go on a game day chapel, you can't go long. But their weekly Bible studies are about 45 minutes to an hour of fellowship. You know, the one-on-one meetings are just absolutely critical. That's when you really get to know guys, right? That's when you really, like, when I meet with the entire team, I'm blessed that at the start of the year, the teams let me have my 2 minutes to say what I do, and I tell them all the things I've just mentioned to you, and then I say, but remember, no matter whether you come to chapel or Bible study, or you're involved with us or not, life gets in the way of real sports. You know, there's always something going on in their lives because they have the same real life issues that you and I have. So, so those are where you really can help them. And then there's like one-on-one discipleship. So, for example, my chapel leader for the Jets, Mark Scheifele, he's really starting to grow. So I'm doing a one-on-one discipleship with him. I'm working hard with Mark. We meet every week. Even during pandemic, we meet virtually and. So when you can do those kind of things, it's really helpful. And then you help out wherever you can. Like I said, my wife, she's got a Bomber Wives Bible study that she started. And then we do hospitality. We have barbecues and Thanksgiving here and stuff. So I'm really blessed to be able to do what I do. I'm very privileged. I never take it lightly. We have so much favor with the teams. And it's built up kind of collaterally. So across the CFL, if one guy messes up really bad, it's going to affect us all. Or conversely, if one guy does a really good job, then there'll be some openings, more favor and with each of the teams. I think the guy that you know, my good Ukrainian buddy, I'm Ukrainian, so my good Ukrainian friend is Chappie. Well, he's done a phenomenal job there. And so the more doors that he opens up, then chances are the door's going to open up for me. And it goes vice versa. So yeah, it's really, especially the CFL, we've got 9 of us and we all work. We're on staff with Athletes in Action. So we're tight, you know, because basically you're like a loner, right? Like you just work. I'm the only guy here in Winnipeg. So when we get to talk on these Zoom calls with each other, it's quite fun.
You talk about the hockey culture, because when I think of football, I think of faith in football and you see them kneeling after the games and praying. Is it more difficult to be in the hockey culture and be a chaplain than it is the football culture?
Yeah, that's a great question, Holly. I would agree it is more difficult, but it is coming. It's getting better in a sense that Hockey Ministries International didn't start. They started about 10 years behind baseball chapel, football chapel. Plus that culture, like, in football, we've got that strong Southern culture from the United States where those players, they've got Athletes in Action or a Fellowship of Christian Athletes, like seeing them when they're in high school. Whereas a university football player in U of M probably doesn't even know what a chaplain is. Mm. So, which we're trying to change. We're trying to get more people to recruit. But at the same time, so the level of acceptance for football is greater than hockey, but it's getting much better. And, you know, we're starting to blaze some trails in hockey. But, it's definitely harder. But those guys that do get involved are really dialing in, like a Shifley kind of guy. Those kind of guys are really catching on.
It's interesting that you say that, though, because, you know, there is this faith in football. And you, even in baseball, you hit a home run or, you know, people do the cross and, you know, point to the sky kind of thing. You don't see that as much in hockey.
No, you don't. That's just the way they are. Like, if you watch an interview of a hockey player, like, I could probably tell you what they're going to say before they say it.
Oh, for sure.
These guys, from the time they're 15, they're wearing the suit and tie, at least the tie to the games when they're playing AAA Bantam or whatever. They're programmed, right? They're very much, their culture kind of, and the nice thing about it is they're very humble that way. Like, their humility is a high level of humility, high level of character, but, you know, obviously for the most part, but you know, every sports culture's got good, bad, and indifferent individuals. But I'm just saying that I think that culture, they're a little bit more reserved, let's say, compared to football, where they're a little more open and demonstrative. Like, you know, we're going through a study right now on Tim Tebow. You know, there's a guy that, you know, was very demonstrative with his faith, and of course he's an exception. Like, but he's also a polarizing figure, right? And but it's coming. Hockey players are coming along so far, and I'm so proud of them. They're just doing a phenomenal job.
If you were to mention football players, I could probably name a dozen football players in a matter of seconds that have a faith. I mean, you had mentioned Shifley. Other than like Ryan Smith from the Edmonton Oilers.
Dean
McCammon. I guess Dean McCammon, sure. There was really no athlete that I was like, oh, that NHL player is definitely, you know, has a faith.
Sure. Oh, I know. And it's slowly coming along, and that's where, like, you know, hockey ministries, like, so in my role, I work full-time for Athletes in Action, but I also serve for Hockey Ministries International, because when I do a hockey chapel, I'm doing it on behalf of HMI. And they're doing a really good job of trying to profile the, you know, the Jerome McGinleys, the Mike Fishers, the guy, you know, as they retire, to kind of like, and while they're playing as well, and the Shane Doans, who are really strong in their faith. And then they got this next wave, the Shifleys, the Lowrys, the Morrisseys, those kind of guys that are come behind, like, that they're really trying to elevate that so that it will be. Like, and the thing is, their platform in Canada is so big.
When you talk about kind of just like your life and your life in sports, I kind of want to go back to you and your story and how baseball was kind of your gateway into this whole world. When you were kind of pursuing that baseball route, did you ever in a million years think this is where you would end up, or where was the goal?
Oh, Holly, that is such a good question. I would never in a million years think I'd be doing this. Like, guys, I was sort of the antithesis of it, right? I'd go out with the guys and have a good time. When I worked at Baseball Canada, it was great. There's some great humanitarian things. I was an instructor at the World Children's Baseball Fair, and I thought, that's my kind of like cachet point, is sort of that I did something to help the world. But now I realize, wow, like, I can do a kids baseball camp with 15 kids and try to lead them to the Lord. Now that's an impact, you know. So it's funny how your views change on that. And wow, like, yeah, I would have never dreamt this, but I'm so glad that God actually took me through the other part of it. There's a lot of a dark side. There's a lot of good part of my previous part of my life. I didn't come to the Lord until I was 35 years old. It was like, I needed to go through that, but it also shaped me, and it gave me kind of access into this world, because I understand high-performance sport. I'm not awestruck by these guys. I mean, there's people are some people would be like, kind of, they want to be their friend, or they want an autograph or whatnot, but I mean, I'm used to that. So I think it really helped to shape me for what I do. So, you know, I look back now, and, you know, when things happen to us, we kind of wonder, God, why are you doing this? And you look back, go, yeah, okay, I needed to go through that to develop me into the person that I am today.
At 35, you went through a lot of stuff, so maybe you're able to relate to those, where if you grew up in the church, you know, continued from at the age of 2, you might not be able to relate as well.
I agree with that, too. I think that because I've gone through some of the stuff maybe the guys are struggling with off the field, that helps. I'm not saying that's great, like, and I think people that haven't gone through those things can be very, very effective as well. But in my case, it kind of gives me some relevancy, because they know that I've struggled, and they know that I'll also reveal one other thing, that I'm a mental health consumer, that I battle depression really hard. And even though I'm on all the time when I'm at the stadium or the rink, I battle it hard. In fact, 5 years ago, I was hospitalized with a manic episode when they diagnosed me as mild bipolar. And now I'm praise the Lord that, you know, I've got a great doctor, my bride, and the Lord doing a work in me. But I also understand, though, that I can tell my guys that, right? My guys all know that. When I went through the hospital, I remember our owner, Mark Chipman, as a good friend of mine, said, he's learning, when you come back, you just come back when you're ready to go and you're healthy. You'll never worry about your job. And so that was huge for me. And same with my boss, Dave Clausen, at Athletes in Action. The fact that, yeah, if you've gone through some things, it can really help to talk to the athletes.
You're pouring out into the lives of a lot of players. What do you do then to recharge?
Very good point. I need to do a better job at recharging. especially because of my health. Ever since I've been in a hospital, like, I've been very cognizant about taking, like, because we work a lot of weekends and stuff, to take an extra day somewhere off to allow myself to recharge, to regenerate. So I really work hard at that, at trying to get that, but also to try to recharge spiritually as well. And so I've got some men that are in my life that are in my small group that I'll lean on. And I can tell them things that are going on that I can't tell anybody else to, right? And that's important. So that recharges me spiritually. Emotionally, I have a psychiatrist that I see once every 3 weeks. I mean, there's stuff he knows that nobody else knows. Yeah, so that's how I recharge. And I'm trying my best to recharge so that I can regenerate. And in fact, that came up on our prayer call for Athletes in Action today, that we were in a, you know, the Brooks in smaller groups. And one of the girls on call was saying, you know, in the ministry, she runs all the camps and Western Canada, and she's kind of saying, yeah, I need some soul care. I need to really recharge spiritually. And I thought, yeah, I need to do that, a better job of that too. So I'm still trying to figure it out, but I really do try, just take some extra time and just get away on my own.
I think that definitely the culture has changed, but we're not usually one to say, hey, listen, I'm dealing with depression, I'm dealing with these mental health things. Do you think in sports or just in general, have we done a better job at breaking down those walls?
Absolutely. I mean, Bell Let's Talk has been fantastic. I mean, it's opened up the eyes of people. It's made it a topic that we can talk about. 10 years ago, I probably wouldn't have mentioned it on this call, but now I'm much more bold to say it. You know, when, like, I'm watching Life in the NFL, Life on Terry Bradshaw last night, and Terry Bradshaw's got depression. I'm going, like, Terry Bradshaw? Like, I mean, these guys, like, he's an entertainer on Fox on the football broadcast, and you'd never know it, but. So I think people are making, they're much more bold about it, and it's much more accepted and people understand it. So if we say we're not having a good day and I need some space or I'm tired, employers, people, friends, ministry partners, they know that.
I mean, there's obviously been some growth in things like Athletes in Action, especially over the years, but how do you change a culture? You had mentioned before, how do you blaze some new trails?
That's a hard one. So for example, I'm currently, we have a soccer team in town called Valor FC. We're in discussions with one of the assistant coaches who is a Christian who wants to have a chaplain. So he's got a guy that we're going to interview next week. But there's a whole different culture, right? Like, our national soccer director is the Vancouver Whitecaps chaplain, and also Trinity Western men's coach. And like, he says the soccer culture is completely different. And so, like, so trying to blaze a trail in that league, that new Canadian league that they have, it's really hard. But it's one of those things that, again, if we put the time and the effort in and we show that we care, that makes a big difference. Because just by, like, what we do is we call ours having a ministry of presence. The fact that we're there, we want to be there, but not get in the way. But at the same time, it's just show these organizations that we care. And so I think what happens is slowly over time, like, when you're trying to blaze that trail, it's not always even, it's going to go some ups and some downs, but over time, if you're there and if you're consistent and you're persistent, then people will see that, and that's what people want. They want you to be genuine. They want you to do what you say, and they want you to be consistent. And then we need to be persistent, because it's one thing to say things but not carry them out.
What would you say to someone who says, "Why does a sport team even need a chaplain? What's the big deal?"
I would say that we are part chaplain, part life coach. We're trying to, and Athletes in Action, we teach what we call a total athlete. That's the physical, the mental, and the spiritual. And we got coaches that do a phenomenal job of the physical and the mental. But to help with the spiritual side, that's important to develop the total athlete, not just so they'll become better players, but they'll become better men and women. And so I know, as a former technical director of Baseball Canada, that, for example, visualization and mental preparation is a very big part of sport. But I also understand now that that same athlete can, if they have their confidence and they're firmly girded in something, can have a firm foundation in our Lord, that they will actually be stronger and more resilient, and they'll be able to perform even better. And then on top of that, our major overarching goal is to go and make disciples of them all. So when I'm mentoring Mark Scheifele, I'm not mentoring him to just make him better. I'm hoping that he'll go and then he'll do that to some, he'll mentor someone else. I think that's where we come in, and we just provide a level of care for athletes. Because when these things happen, so for example, when Coach Harris died literally at the practice field of the Winnipeg Bombers about 8 years ago, they don't know where the management doesn't know where to turn. So they'll turn to someone like Chappie in Edmonton or myself. And so I ended up doing all the grief counseling, I did the funeral. And so all the players, like the entire team, like it wasn't just like the chapel guys. So we're there to stand in the gap, because they have those needs. If they want their players to perform and then be a good character too, right? That's really important, because we're developing men of character, which is what we're attempting to.
We talk about those hills and valleys in life, the mountaintops and the valleys, where we're looking to God and we're asking that question, God, why me? Why am I put into this situation? Can you think of a time, or maybe there's many times in your life, where you ask that question?
Yeah, I would say that those times happened when I would, you know, for years, I was battling depression really hard. I was having trouble even getting out of bed. Some days I wouldn't. Some days I would stay in bed at 4 o'clock. And those were the times when I would kind of go, why? And now I'm thinking, God, you put me in a ministry, and now I have this affliction of depression. Like, why me? Like, that was really the thing. But I really believe that it took, he was still working on some edges, like in my life and my character. And so that was a specific time where I was wondering why, like, why do I need to go through this? But then, you know, when I talk to my players, I'll say that, you know, that nothing much grows on the mountaintop. Like, there's no vegetation up there. And you don't spend a lot of time on the mountaintop, but you spend a lot of time in the valleys, and that's where everything grows. And so for me, that was a real growth period. And I can look back on it and draw on that, but also remind myself that, you know, I'm not far from that, that I need to be reminded that, you know, that we will have those valley times. And that's where we do our most growth. I know for me, that's been the case.
All right, I have three quick ones for you, and we'll see how this goes. I don't even know if I'm going to know the answer or not. How often are you asked to pray for a win?
It's funny. I get that all the time. I go through church, and when I first started this job, the Bombers weren't making the playoffs. The Jets had just come back, and they were horrible. I wouldn't say horrible. They weren't making the playoffs either. And so people would say to me, you're not praying for a win enough. You're not praying for a win. And people would say, I think you might be the common denominator why they're both losing. Maybe it's you. and I say to them, look, I don't pray for a win. I pray for spirit competition. I pray for safety. I pray, most importantly, that we would use this great platform of football or hockey to honor and glorify God. And, you know, when we think of that, like, I mean, that's what I tell people, and they're going, they can't believe that I don't pray for a win. So, yeah, so, no, I get asked it all the time. They say, hey, you better pray some more. You better, you know, okay, yeah, and I just kind of wave and keep going, you know. Like,
favorite moment as a chaplain, would it be the championship last year, or is there one other moment?
I would have to say Grey Cup. That was, for me, we never won one, and far even before my time, 28 years. And so, and also to have my bride, Heather, to be on the field, like she was as part of the wives program, she was able to come on the field and into the dressing room there. So that was a huge thing for me, and yeah, so that would definitely be my highlight.
Okay, well, I have a follow-up to that one before my final, and Holly's got one for you as well.
Okay.
Did you get your Grey Cup ring yet?
Not yet, but they have asked me for my size, so I know I'm getting one, so I'm very honored and blessed, because it doesn't always happen. Like, the chaplain doesn't always get one. I know that most guys have, some didn't. So, like, I just was kind of like, okay, well, if I get one, great, you know, but I'm so blessed that I do get one, and I don't know when that will be now with this pandemic, but, yeah, I'm really honored that they would think of me.
Do you have a favorite player, or are you allowed to have a favorite player?
Yeah, I'm not allowed to have a favorite player. I mean, I don't have a jersey. Like, I really can't, right? Because I can't really pick a bomber. Like, my chapel leader when I first started was Milt Steagall, but I can't. How do I wear a Steagall shirt? And yet I got Drake Nevis this year as my chapel leader. So I've had so many guys, and, you know, and so I don't have a favorite player, like, at all. I love them all. And I know that sounds very lame, that answer. But, I really don't have a favorite player.
A lot of people will use sport as a entertainment, a stress relief. Can you watch a sporting event now and just sit back and relax? Or are you always on edge and hoping your boys do okay no matter what team they're on?
Yeah, it is hard. Like, especially with football, I'm blessed that I'm on the sidelines. So it's hard not to get involved, kind of. And you really get into it and you're really, you know, you're on edge. I find for me, that's why with my baseball background, I no longer do the Gold Eyes anymore because it was just getting too much with the baseball and the football in the summer. So I got another gentleman doing that. But so now, if I can watch a Major League Baseball game, I have no skin in the game, as they say. So I can watch it and have a lot less stress than if it's the Jets or the Bombers, because I'm watching with a more of a different eye.
Mm-hmm. I love that we get to talk sports and faith, especially during these quarantining, social distancing type times. At El Coral, KOROL 33 on all socials, and at AIA Canada for Athletes in Action. Lauren, we appreciate you. Make sure you stay safe, and thank you for taking some time.
You're very welcome, and thank you for taking the time to raise up our platform for sports ministry. So thank you, and God bless you both.
I'm inspired. I just love the fact that we're able to dive into individuals' lives. And I mean, when you talk about two of my favorite things, you can't go wrong.
No, absolutely. And it's always so inspiring just to know that they've gone through this journey. And if you're going through something that's rough, a difficult patch, hopefully there's been a story amongst all the ones we've been able to share with you that will encourage you.
All right. So you could reach out on places like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, download on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
And of course, you can always go to faithstrongtoday.com.